Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. Top of the league, Fulham FC, I will add, after a brilliant 3-2 win at Stoke. Marco Silva's boys, whilst missing Mitrovic and Wilson. My name is Jack Collins, and I will be your host today. And joining me is Mr. Farrell Monk.
Hello, everyone.
Mr. Don Betts.
Hello, hello.
And making his podcast debut. Debut on the BBC this week, debut on Fulhamish at the weekend. What a week it's been for Mr. Jack Stroudley.
Hello, mate, you alright?
Yeah, not too bad. The question that was posed to you at the game yesterday, Jack, which one of those is more important? There's only one right answer.
This one, obviously, of course.
Absolutely, that's the wrong answer. Before we get going on Stoke and what was an unbelievable day out, Faz, do you want to kick us off with some three-word reviews?
I would absolutely love to. Starting off with our three-word review aficionado, Richard Bamber's 1-2-3 with the one spelled W-O-N. Nice little touch there. We got Matt Wall's Wee Mooney's Business, Ross McSweeney's 3 under par, and 30 frames is our moon is worth. All very good. But I'll finish because of just all the stuff that's been going on Twitter, in Fulham Twitter this week, with Paul Coombs, 800 happy fans.
Faz, you sound like you had a great day on the source because you can barely speak today.
I know. I mean, you know, I've got a face for podcasts, but I don't have exactly a voice for podcasts right now. Considering I was in the presence of all the three people that I'm speaking with today, I'm surprised other people's voices are still going as strong. After, you know, belting out the Harry Wilson, Mitrovic and Niskins chant for the 500th time when we finally, you know, yesterday. but yeah, it's hopefully this is it will get stronger as the podcast
just
goes on.
If Faz has finished his point, just keep going. Dom, a wonderful, wonderful day out at Stoke. Started and finished with a police escort to the ground. Obviously, the naughty 800 were very much...
Actually, it was 749, mate. I mean, to be fair, I think it was... that's just the usual thing with Stoke, isn't it? They tried to kettle you straight into that pub, kettle you onto the bus, into the ground, and then get out of here, please.
It's basically... It was relatively good service. I had a good time.
Yeah, I said, for Stoke, considering my record at Stoke, it was the first time I've seen us win there. I mean, I think it's my third time going. The first time we got relegated. The second time was the 1-2 seasons ago when, what was it 2-0 defeat, I want to say? Or 2-1, something like that. Straight after, I think, the October international break. I think I was still hungover from Bulgaria away after a few nights in Sofia and was like, why am I going to Stoke on that? But yeah, so yesterday was totally different. And, you know, all the fans yesterday who were there and were making great noise. And it was great away. I think... You know, I don't usually have high hopes for Stoke away, but to be honest, looking at it as if you're comparing away days this season, for me, the ones I've been, the only ones I've been to is Luton and Reading. It's probably second behind Blackburn away, and it was great to see. I know we love putting 6 and 7 goals past different people and things like that, but it was just great to see actually like a tough sort of grinded out game, if that made sense. Like, although the last 3 games have been great in that, it was nice to see it actually grind out a result. And I think it probably feels more rewarding when you've actually grinded out a result. And obviously a big 3 points, especially with what happened with Bournemouth, which we'll obviously touch on later. But yeah, great away day, great point. I mean, who doesn't love a good away day? It's a decent outro. And you're back in London before 8 p.m. I mean, perfect day, I should say.
Absolutely. Jack, it did look like a tough task on paper. We looked at it and thought, this is a tricky fixture. This is somewhere where we might actually struggle. Then Mitrovic and Wilson are deemed out. And the next thing is we're behind after 39 seconds. And it did look for a minute like this could be a really tricky ask.
Yeah, the Bet365 Stadium, it's not an easy place to go to, Britannia, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, and then with the added Mitro and Wilson both having COVID, it was looking like a bit of a tough task. And then to go 1-0 down inside 30 seconds, you're thinking, oh God. here we go again. And then, yeah, we kind of stats the game plan and whatnot. And it was the kind of game that, you know, you kind of look at it towards the end of the season. It just seems like it's going to be a massive win. You know, it's a sign of kind of a side that's made of sterner stuff. You bring players in like Muniz and Reed who don't necessarily start games. And I thought they both handled them quite well, in particular Muniz. And yeah, I think just overall, while we weren't necessarily at our best for the 90 minutes, it's one of those games that you look back on and say, oh, that's a massive win.
Yeah, absolutely. Faz, it does feel like that. It's probably a more important and a more justified in terms of, you know, league table win than any of the ones where we're scoring 6+ in the last couple of weeks. We're talking about a really good result against a tough team. And, you know, it's a difficult place to go. Stoke has been, you know, notoriously bad. We thought the worst. And then suddenly you're looking at that and thinking that's more important than maybe any of the last three.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen it time and time again in the past where we fail to capitalise on our rivals dropping points. And, you know, after the Bournemouth dropping points yesterday and Blackburn also dropping points as well, we've seen, you know, cast your mind back to the last Championship season when it was a case of like quite a lot of the teams around us near the top of the table were dropping points and Fulham were doing exactly the same thing, and we kept on saying what a missed opportunity. But here we are now, the teams around us are dropping points. We had those games in hand. We've gone and picked up those wins, and now the table is looking so much better than it was just before Christmas when we weren't playing any games and we started to fall behind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dom, we'll get onto the goals. We'll go through the game as it goes. But Muniz's first strike is an absolute corker. Now, whether he means it or not is up for debate. But I think you look at that. The ball into feet is really, really good from Harrison Reed. He takes a touch and absolutely wallops it. And ultimately, you know, for a player who we were a bit concerned about, who we were, you know, stepping into big shoes, in Mitrovic's shoes, that's a moment that can turn seasons, isn't it? You know, you get it into your feet, first couple of minutes, you're 1-0 down and you hit that strike. Suddenly, he looks like a player possessed. And, you know, compare that to what he was like at Derby, where it did look a little bit all over the place, or in the Bristol City Cup game, where things just didn't seem to go his way. And it is amazing what a bit of confidence can do for a player.
Yeah, I mean, he turned into Prime Adriana from Pro Evolution Soccer 6, I mean, for that goal. I think Rodrigo Muniz, some people sort of say, oh, is he up the level? Well, I think if you take out the cup games he's played, so against, was it Birmingham and against Leeds, if you look at it, his minutes per goal in league fixtures must be exceptional, because you know, he hasn't come on a huge amount of times for Fulham this season, and whenever he does, I think he's done what's exactly needed of him. I think he played very well when he came on in the Blackburn away fixture in the 7-0. You saw Reading away, you know, for I think it was for the seventh goal when Mitrovic scored. The great work he did, and obviously Mitrovic tapped in the rebound. Obviously, great finish yesterday. You can debate whether he got the second goal or not.
He didn't get the second goal because Skybet paid me out £17.50 on my father bet for Fabio Carvalho to score.
But I think, yeah, Muniz, obviously, whenever he's come in league games this season, I think he's done exactly what's needed of him. And I think, you know, people worried, you could argue we without our two best players yesterday, without Mitrovic and Harry Wilson. But I think, you know, as we mentioned, the players come in did perfectly fine. And I think, you know, that will do wonders for Muniz's confidence as well with the goal yesterday and, you know, how he played all around, really. And I think, you know, you can see, even on his Instagram post, how much the people in the squad seem to love having him around. And, you know, the amount of players who were commenting yesterday was amazing. And you can see he wants to make this move work, and I know he's not going to replace Mitrovic, but he wants to play as much as he can, and all the players are behind him. And yeah, it was great to see, because people have said maybe he's not exactly a like-for-like replica for when Mitrovic comes in, but I think we played to his strengths yesterday, you know, and, you know, he's still, people forget, I think, how young he is sometimes as well. And yeah, great performance from him yesterday, and yeah, what a finish for that first goal.
Yeah, absolutely. A goal every 89 minutes in the league. I just did some quick maths. So, you know, we're learning very quickly. But yeah,
you're trying to take over from Singer as our resident statistician now.
Mate, I do my best. I do my best to fulfill all the roles on this podcast. You know, sometimes host, sometimes stato, sometimes poetry. You know how it is. But look, Jack, obviously we then go and take the lead. And I mean, I don't mind who you're giving the goal to. It was a bit of a weird one in the way end, because no one realised it went in until the players started celebrating. And then there was a kind of like really bizarre celebration. Dom was in the concourse, obviously, and
I just come out the toilet and I was like, what's going on, like who has scored, not for us as in which team has scored, because it didn't, if we'd scored like an equivalent of the first goal, you'd hear a loud roar, but it wasn't that loud. So I was like, Have they scored? Have we got a penalty? Like, what on earth is going on here?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It reminded me a lot of when we played Huddersfield at the beginning of the season. Josh Onimer scored, and there was a delayed reaction of about 5 seconds.
He's also in the concourse for that.
Do you see any goals?
I think I missed three on Tuesday. So, what was that? 4 goals missed out of 9?
Not bad. Decent record. Decent week for you.
Like I say, it's very similar to the Onimer one in terms of a very delayed reaction. It's quite funny. I watched about the highlights earlier, and the goal goes in, and there's kind of a collective groan amongst Stoke fans that are kind of behind the goal when that scored, and then it just goes dead silent for a good five, 10 seconds, and then everyone just kind of celebrates. But yeah, it was a bit of a weird goal. But yeah, obviously a good time to score right before the break as well, even if Dom missed it.
Yeah, absolutely. A beautiful run from Carvalho as well, Jack. It was, you know, he created that all himself.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
He also starts off the move. He actually wins it in midfield, and we've seen that tenacity from Carvalho over and over again. And it's brilliant because he actually like fights his way through 3 Stoke bodies to claim it, play a lovely ball through to Deco Dobre Reed that totally cuts out. I think it was Phil Jagielka, and then obviously follows it in. How many times do you see pundits when they're analysing goals or analysing, you know, midfielders play? Like when they play the pass, they don't just look at it. They're always like, now go and make the run. Now and go and get that goal. And that's exactly what he did. It was a wonderful goal all round, I think.
Yeah, I mean, aside from not knowing it had gone in, it was really enjoyable. And that was the moment. Obviously, Dom, then we passed up a few opportunities to kind of seal the deal, really. And it did feel like there was going to be an equaliser. You know, as Stoke started to get into the game, and we'll come onto them feeling like they were going to get an equaliser again after the third one. But, you know, at this point, it was Fulham had 2 or 3 good opportunities, start of the first half, Fab again involved in pretty much everything. And then suddenly, you know, out of nowhere, Lewis Baker hits an absolute rock. Now, not that out of nowhere in terms of how Stoke were playing, but just what a hit for one. And it spent so long in the air that I shouted good hit before it went in. And then I was like, oh no, that's not what I meant to do at all there. And I was like, oh, he has hit that well though. And then it goes in the back of the net and you're like, oh right, we've had a problem here. But you know, Fulham have conceded a couple now of late, and you know, we've conceded a couple of worldies. You know, it does feel like at the moment, you know, obviously the first goal is the first goal, and there's some defensive lapses of concentration early doors, but you can appreciate that. It does feel at the moment we're only conceding worldies.
Yeah, I think there was a stat. I think it might have been going into the Birmingham game, or maybe it was going into the Bristol game, that, you know, we had like the best attack and best defence in the league. I was like, if we got the best defence in the league, I'm really concerned for the rest of the other 23 teams, because like some of the lapses in concentration we've had. But it's a great hit from Lewis Baker. And, you know, Lewis Baker, if you've seen any of Lewis Baker from his time at Middlesbrough, from his time at Vitesse, on him, you know how much technical quality he's got. It's a great hit. I had a few people saying, who've seen it back when we watched it on the train home, saying, oh, I think Rodak could save that. I was like, well, he has actually levered it into the corner.
It moves so much in the air.
Yeah. There's not really too much that I think Rodak could do about it. I mean, yes, people could argue, oh, you could probably get across faster, but I don't think so. I think it's just a great hit from Lewis Baker. And so that showed the technical quality he's got. But yeah, I think that it wasn't, yesterday was the most we've been tested since the Sheffield United game at home just before Christmas. And yeah, when they got back into the game, obviously we had to then sort of regroup again and go for it. But yeah, I mean, there was plenty of times, as you said, at when we were 2-1 up and we were 3-2 up, that, you know, Stoke were sort of front of the door. It wasn't like Bristol, and it wasn't like Birmingham, where we could just turn it up for 5 minutes and score 3 goals.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Jack, obviously the goal for the third is an absolute thunderbolt from Bobby, and does look like the chance might go. Obviously, Muniz hits the bar. Someone did ask, is that the closest anyone's ever come to a hat-trick without scoring a hat-trick? He's actually got one goal, but he might have come as close as anyone will ever come to scoring a hat-trick while scoring only once.
Yeah, it's quite unlucky for Muniz, to be honest with you. I'm sure he would have loved the hat-trick, but and only getting one. But yeah, in terms of the goal, it's really good technique from Bobby. Kind of comes out to him and he fizzes it into the top corner. Especially after, and then obviously I'm sure we're going to go on to, he then kind of went under a little bit of pressure from Stoke. And I remember looking at you, Jack, and saying, oh God, is he going to end up a Tresman? Because I was convinced that...
I've never heard that before and I really enjoyed it.
I was convinced that Stoke were going to score, but I think they hit the post, and I think Rodak made a good save. And then, yeah, we saw it out in the end.
But Faz, maybe that's the big thing here. That's a real character to go, you know, one go behind, claw it back, go in front, be pegged back, and then go and win it with whilst missing some key players. It really did impress me, Fulham yesterday. Like it felt like there was a real togetherness, a real mentality, a real shift in attitude from the squad. A lot of people, we said, with the team that was out, with Mitrovic out, with Wilson out, you would have offered a lot of people a point yesterday and they would have said thanks very much. But Fulham were just not having any of it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just one of the many things from yesterday that was such a huge positive. And yeah, I think that also we did, you know, towards the end of the game, especially when they brought on that young winger, I think his name is like Philogene Bidace.
He's on loan good player.
Who was absolutely terrorising Dennis Odoi at right back. But we managed to hold on for the victory. They weren't able to Stoke create that many clear-cut chances apart from that weird one, which I think Wright Phillips dribbled onto the post right at the end. But apart from that, it was largely comfortable. Like I didn't think for the first time in quite some time when we've, you know, been under pressure towards the end of the game that we might give up the points. I never felt as if Fulham were in danger of surrendering the lead, even though they'd already conceded two already from two good goals. Especially as we've talked about previously, the Stoke team are a pretty good Stoke team. They're going quite well under Michael O'Neill. We know how good he is, and especially since coming back to Stoke. And again, also they're also quite a young team as well, Stoke. Apart from like the obvious old heads in the team, that's probably whacking up their average age by considerably. Against that youthful team, we thought they could smell blood. Considering that when they saw the team sheet come out without Mitrovic and Wilson, and they started with their tails up, but we managed to overcome that all. And it just still feels really good even today.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it feels so good. It feels so good. It's probably time to play this. Three consecutive wins, top of the league. That is the horn, I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Sammy insisted that I played it. I actually feel like it's going to jeopardise our chances in the long run. But ultimately, I have to do what I'm told by the big boss. So you get to these moments and you do what you're told. Philogene Bidace, interestingly, was born in Hammersmith and grew up in Ealing. So there you go. One that Fulham let slip through
the net. Fulhamish breaking news.
Yeah, Fulhamish breaking news. He was born in Hammersmith Hospital, so can't knock it. He's a local
too,
lad.
Too far north for me, that, though, isn't it?
It is so, too far north for you. Look, Dom, let's kind of look at the game as a whole. And yes, there are things that you can be concerned about. One of them is Dennis Odoi. We'll come on to the injury to Kenny Tete in the questions. The fact that Philogene Bidace was able to get at him so regularly, so quickly, and saw him as a potential weakness is something we look at. But ultimately, all you can look at from yesterday, I think, is that is a huge win, especially in the circumstances, and overall a massive, massive result for Fulham.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to look at it. I think I said it going to the game yesterday, although I said I predicted a 3-1 win, I thought today was just about getting 3 points. I don't care how it comes about, whether we win 1-0, whether we absolutely batter them, I couldn't really care less. It was a massive 3 points, because if you look at our sort of upcoming fixtures, probably between now and the end of February, you'd say this was the toughest one out of all of them, I'd argue. And to get 3 points, and you know, as I said, we didn't make it easy, but we did get the 3 points in the end, is absolutely massive. Compiled with obviously the results from yesterday, with, you know, Hull doing us an absolute favour in sort of the last 7 days or so, getting wins against Blackburn and Bournemouth. And I think, you know, what's ridiculous is obviously we went on that run sort of really just after Blackburn 7-0 game, sort of in between that period and end of December, where, you know, we're 8 points clear now, 9 if you see our sort of absolute ridiculous goal difference. That what would have happened if we turned up in that period? Like how many points clear would we be now? We didn't draw those games. We didn't lose Sheffield United. It's absolutely crazy. And I think, you know, we're really showing now. And I think the break we had, I think, might have worked in our favour in regard to that. You know, it allowed us to reset and really go again in that, you know, because in that Bristol City game in the Cup, I thought, we haven't really sort of changed anything and we are still looking quite turgid, albeit it was the first game in sort of 2 or 3 weeks. But yeah, we've really turned it on in the last sort of 4 or 5 games. And yeah, it's great to see. And, you know, and the games are coming thick and fast now. It's weird we've got sort of two midweeks, so actually no midweek games for Fulham. It seems like, looking at the schedule, we've got one every single week. But, yeah, to be 8 points clear, nine with our superior goal difference at this stage of the season is simply great to see.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, we'd be 19 points clear if we'd won all those games. So they are quick maths. Jack, just on a last kind of point on that, how good was Tom Cairney yesterday? Obviously, Muniz will get the headlines, but TC, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant. And he has been brilliant since coming in for Seri, since Seri went to AFCON. Just in the middle of the park, just bringing the play together. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit later on as to whether Seri gets his place back or not.
Yeah,
but
I've got a lot of questions about it.
But yeah, I just think, yeah, brilliant once again from Cairney. He's really bringing probably the best he's been since that under Slavisa Jokanović during the 23 undefeated days, I think, at the moment. He's playing really good football.
Absolutely. Right, after the break, we are going to be having a little look at the rest of the league, a couple of results that went our way yesterday, and kind of discussing what, you know, what needs to happen over the next couple of games if Fulham are to just seal this deal and get the job done. And then after that, we'll be getting on to some questions. Don't go anywhere.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast with me, Jack Collins, Dom Betts.
Hello, hello.
Farrell Monk.
Hello, friends.
And Jack Stroudley.
Hello.
Right, let's talk about the rest of the league table. Now, obviously, Fulham have gone 8 points clear at the top of the table, which is nice to see, isn't it? Nice to see. But Bournemouth slipping up again. And we've seen a lot of things on Twitter, Faz, from a lot of Bournemouth fans basically like saying that they were basically secure in the top two. And now it's not too, you know, not looking too shabby off them ending up outside of the top six. You know, Borough win that game in hand. We're talking about a team who might be 5 points off slipping out of the top six. It's all gone very, very sour down with the Cherries.
Yeah, and it's funny how much we were talking maybe about 10 games ago, as little as that, just... We were like, well, it's definitely going to be a three-horse race with Fulham, Bournemouth and West Brom. And since then, West Brom have completely, not completely fallen away, but certainly, you know, doubting their position near the
dropped
top of the table.
Dropped 10 points in the last five games. Not acceptable, yeah. If you want to challenge.
Not great. Not great when you're a team that definitely should be challenging at the business end of the table. And then Bournemouth have started to fritter away with a couple of quite poor results. Let's be upfront about it. You know, the last second loss against Luton was, I mean, admittedly, I didn't watch all that game, but I can't say that they particularly played that well or well enough to even get a point. And Luton battled well and got into it. I've not caught up with the highlights or anything or read any reports about the match that they lost against Hull yesterday as well. Sort of analysis that you could tune into Fulhamish for. I haven't watched or seen anything about it, so I'm going to comment about it. But, you know, we know that Hull are not a particularly good team, and Bournemouth lost. They lost at home, and you know, I've just been told that, you know, like you're saying about the stuff that's going on Twitter from Bournemouth fans, and it sounds like all the similar stuff that that Fulham fans talked about when Scott Parker was manager. Like, don't get me wrong, I like Scott Parker. I thought he did a pretty good job under the circumstances, but of course you can't ignore all the things that we complained about in terms of, like, they're not great football and we tended just to sit on leads, and it sounds like the fans have started to pick up those things as well. And if it, you know, for it sounds like it's just going to be the same old Scott Parker, and maybe maybe he might turn things around and get Bournemouth promoted, but are they going to be in a really good position to keep Bournemouth in the Premier League next year? But, you know, they need to get there first of all. And while they're dropping points and everyone else is picking them up, you know, that might not be a possibility for them, because given what quality they have at their disposal and given the strength of the league around us, they should be up with us. Let's be quite honest. They should be up there, but they're not.
Absolutely. And Dom, this squad does feel like it is better than losing at home to Hull. Now, obviously, you can have bad results. You can have weird ones where, you know, Fulham lost, obviously, to Reading at home earlier in the season. But Bournemouth feel they're on like a little bit of a slide. They're not playing particularly well. There's a lot of shots from distance. They're not creating big chances in the box. It is, as Fat says, a lot of what we've heard before.
Yeah, it reminds me quite a lot of when we came out of lockdown and with Project Restart or whatever they were calling it in the Championship at the time. It's quite similar to that, I think, because we lost to Leeds and Brentford, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then I think people were looking over our shoulders like, we could genuinely finish seventh here. I think Cardiff were maybe 6 points away from us at the time.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of that. And I said, the comments we're seeing from Bournemouth fans is nothing new to any Fulham fan. And also, it's a bit like the Ranieri situation at Watford in regards to that. Like, both these situations, we've warned Watford fans, we've warned Bournemouth fans that this will happen. And both have, and then we're, you know, running right at the top of the league. And I think, you know, Scott Parker, you know, I don't even need to watch his post-match interview, and I can probably guess what he said. You know, so he'll probably mention the word moments,
margins, moments, all the usual stuff,
the usual Scott Parker bingo card. But yeah, I think, as I said, they have, even when they played against us, I wasn't that impressed with them. They basically scored like a FIFA 15 kickoff goal to go 1-0 up, and then
I respect the hustle.
Yeah, I think they basically didn't really offer much more than that. And I think with Bournemouth is they've generally got to be worried, because if you're looking at the teams in and around the playoffs and you're looking at the teams who are in the top six right now, they are the out of form team.
Yep.
All the other teams, bar obviously Blackburn in the last couple of games, have all been pushing themselves up. I know they probably will finish in the top six, and I don't think they've got anything to worry about in that regard. But they do have to be careful, because teams are going for those playoffs. It's going to be close this year. There's plenty of teams outside the top six who still believe they didn't get a chance. You know, it's ridiculous that QPR, if they win their game in hand, can go second in the league. I think they've won four in a row.
That's how they're there.
But if they did get second place, I think it's good news for us, because it means a guaranteed 6 points next season, and it means we only need two more teams to finish above. And if Newcastle go down, I think it gives us even a better chance of staying up next season if we were to go up. So yeah, I think Bournemouth really do need to watch out, because they need to, from a Bournemouth perspective anyway, need to stop this slide. I'm perfectly happy for them to continue this terrible vein of form.
What I will say for Scott Parker's benefit is that the amount of times, especially in the promotion season of the Championship with Fulham, was that the amount of times it looked like our form was going to fall off a cliff. We'd have like two bad results in a row, and then Fulham were able to turn it around. So I don't necessarily think that by any means this will be the end of Bournemouth's promotion run. They probably have the right manager there to turn something like this around, because it did happen quite a lot in the Championship that, you know, like just after Project Restart, we lost the Brentford game, we lost the Leeds game quite badly, and then we went on a winning one straight away. So I don't think this is the end. They'll probably try it. They'll probably will turn it around and get back towards the top end.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have no doubt that with a squad this talented, Bournemouth are going to be in the conversation for the automatics. But Jack, when we're looking at this and thinking QPR win that game in hand, they go second. Some credit probably to QPR. They've gone and have won a couple of tricky games of late. They won obviously against West Brom. They've gone to Coventry where we struggled so badly and won 2-1. It was a massive result for them, I think, especially considering the nature of that 88th minute winner. You look at this and think this is a side that feel like they know how to grind out results, feel like they know how to get it done when it matters. And ultimately, I wouldn't bet against it. I said at the start of the season, I thought they'd come up by the playoffs. It doesn't feel against the odds that they'd go one better.
Yeah, credit to them, to be fair. You're right. They're playing really good football at the moment. They said a late win at Coventry yesterday. According to their fans, they took about, I don't know, what, 10,000 is the Ricoh Arena? not mention it.
I think they took over Coventry, if I'm not mistaken. their police force were letting them know how many people they were bringing. So they must have been delighted to have to deal with it. You know, that's most of their home attendance, isn't it? On the average, in 13,000 at Loftus Road this year.
Something about that. And then didn't the police force for QPR tweet something about Fulham? Basically, it was a huge nibble about how they've got more fans, and it was all a bit weird. But
despite the fact we took the same amount to a 12:30 kickoff, shut up.
But yeah, so yeah, in terms of just the promotion race and whatnot, I think it's very interesting. I really wouldn't want to put my neck out in terms of who else I think Fulham are going to go. I'll put my neck out. I think Fulham are going to go up. In terms of who's going to come up with us, I'm not really too sure. Going back, kind of, I know we've mentioned Bournemouth, but going back, I was looking earlier at their run of fixtures. Towards the end of the season, it's absolutely horrendous. They've got Borough, Sheffield United, West Brom, Coventry away, then Fulham, then Blackburn. It's a really, really god-awful run of games for them. And then you look at the kind of the other teams around, it's just really, it's the same as every year, really. You're just looking for someone to kind of grab it by the scruff of the neck, kind of like Fulham having the last few games, just go on a run of form, and like QPR are doing. As much as I wouldn't want QPR to get promoted, and I don't really want Brentford to stay out, although they probably will, it would be quite funny if there was a Premier League with all four of Fulham, Chelsea, Brentford, the QPR. I think that would be quite fun.
Yeah, it'd be at least time for us to have a bit of a laugh, Farrell, no matter if, and we might win some derbies in the Premier League, which is rare.
Yeah, exactly. Although seeing Bournemouth slide and Thomas Frank absolutely losing and getting sent off yesterday was an absolute joy. You know, I think hopefully this tide is this whole sort of like Brentford loving that's coming from certain media outlets is going to slide as much as Bournemouth.
Yeah, but they've got really big intensity in their pre-match huddle, Farrell. So that's the reason they're going to stay up.
Someone said Stoke with spreadsheets, and I thought that was a bit unfair to Stoke, to be honest, who I thought offered a fair bit more.
I mean, I'm just loving them just losing. It's great. At the start of the season, I was like, they won their first few games. And they had a good start. And I was just like, I'm just not watching the Premier League for a while. I'm really out of it. And then ever since I've heard they're losing, I'm like, right, I'm going to watch every match highlight now. I'm well back into the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'd enjoy it nonetheless. No matter who comes up with us, if Fulham are going up, then everyone's going to be very pleased. Right, we've got loads of questions. So after the break, we are going to be dealing with as many of those as we can. Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. With me, Jack Collins, Dom Betts, Farrell Monk, and Jack Stroudley. And let's start with a question we kind of touched on a little bit earlier from TJ Foggy. He says, Marcus Silva said earlier this window that we're not interested in a right back anymore and he's happy with our situation. Does that change now with Kenny Tete's injury? Obviously, Jack, we don't know the full extent of that injury yet and how long he's going to be out, but it didn't look like a good one. When he came back on, he was hobbling all over the place. It didn't look like I think Fulham thought it might be a kind of knock that he could run off. It very much didn't look like that. And Dennis Adoy was terrorised, as we said earlier, by Finnegan Bidace. Do you think Fulham will be looking differently at that situation if that Kenny Tete injury is as bad as we fear?
Yeah, like I said, I think it all depends on the Kenny Tete injury situation, how long he's out for. With Dennis Adoy, I mean, he's obviously kind of been at the club for a while now, but in terms of one-on-ones, he's really not to the same level of Kenny Tete. I kind of thought we might maybe look at a right back anyway. I think kind of when it's either this window or next window, assuming we get promoted, because if Kenny Tete gets injured and I have to see Dennis Adoy in the Premier League again, I think my head will spin. But I think depending on what happens, depending on the Kenny Tete injury, how long he's out for, I would quite like to see us go in for a right back, even if it's, I know, kind of sicker loans now, even if it's just a 6-month loan and just kind of see if he's any good or not, and then potentially an option to buy in the summer.
Yeah, obviously we were linked with Reggie Cannon in the summer, Farrell, who's still at Boa Vista. He's actually been, his place in the team's been usurped, to be honest. So he hasn't actually played all that much football in the Primeira. But you look at that and you think Fulham have obviously let Cyrus Christie go to Swansea. We've seen Marlon Fossey go out on loan down to Bolton. It does feel like perhaps we're a little bit light now if this injury is bad.
Yeah, you're spot on there. Because if Kenny Tete is out the picture, then we are looking automatically, the quality that we have available there in that position is really low. And obviously we should never forget about Steven Sessegnon as well, who admittedly I've never really been that keen on anyway. So yeah, we definitely, if it's a long injury, we definitely need to bolster there. But who do you get in? Because you don't want to get, you know, you've already got someone of huge quality of Kenny Tete. Do you go for someone even better, or depending on who's available and whatnot? But you never know who the transfer department are looking at these days. It could come from absolutely anywhere. We might pick up another Brazilian right back. We might pick up someone from the Belgian fourth division. We never know who's on there. Who's on their radar. But, you know, after, I mean, I love Dennis Odoi. I love that he's still in and around the team. And I love that every time that we think that we might see the last of Dennis Odoi, he might be moved on, he sort of kicks on and gets back into the team. But you could see that his quality is not expected. It's not up to the standard of if we are challenging for the title in the championship, really. We probably do need someone there to go there. I mean, I can't really think of any other person in this team that could fill in at right back off the top of my head.
Harrison Reed actually played a fair bit there for
oh, yeah,
Blackburn when he went there. But I would be loath to move Harrison Reed out of the middle of the team where he's just so incredibly effective. Dom, a quick one from Charles Jones. He says, does Mitrovic go straight back into the side? Rodrigo was amazing yesterday, and in any other context would probably be nailed on to start the next game. James Baldwin says yes. And Romeo Dunn with a great response. He said, crutches are great, but as soon as I'm healed, I'm using my leg.
I think that pretty much sums it up. I mean, he scored 27 goals and got like 6 or 7 assists in what, 25 league games, something like that, 24 league games. Like, yes, of course he goes back into the side. Like, I know Muniz has played well when he's come in this season, but yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, Mitrovic just goes straight back into the side, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. There is probably a case to be made, though, Jack, that, you know, Charles is right. In any other context, given the game that Rodrigo Muniz had yesterday, he starts for almost anyone else, right? You know, you look at what he did and what he achieved and how useful he was. And maybe he's given, not Marco Silva, a selection headache, because I wouldn't suggest that's something ridiculous. But you look at this and think maybe Marco Silva does turn to him with 20 minutes to go instead of bringing him on for 5 minutes at the end. And I don't mean that in terms of if we need a goal, because obviously Alexander Mitrovic is the best striker in this division by some distance, probably the best striker that this division has ever seen. But he has given him something to think about if, you know, maybe it is just a little bit more rotation. He can trust Muniz a little bit more. We get a little bit more minutes at the end of games. And obviously, I think he would have come on in the midweek game against Birmingham if Harrison Reed wasn't a walking red card and had to be substituted. But it did feel like these opportunities have been limited, perhaps. There's a little bit more faith in his ability now.
Yeah, I agree. It's nice that we've got another attacking player in Muniz who is obviously kind of good, but being quite good for us. I agree though. I think Mitrovic starts for us. It's in any other position, you probably could make the argument. But like, as you mentioned, when you've got a forward in Mitrovic who is the best in the league, I don't necessarily think Muniz starts. But then, like I said, it's kind of good for Marco Silva. At least it's right. If I need to do some rotation, I've got someone in Muniz who can come in and do a job, and a good job at that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, also there's Jay Stansfield, and Oscar asked about him. You know, he's now third choice striker. He says, what should we do about Jay Stansfield? Such a promising young player with two quality strikers ahead of him. Don't want him to leave as he's out of contract this summer. It is worth considering that the Stansfield, you know, again, if we were not playing brilliantly yesterday and we were looking for a goal, Stansfield might have come on, but ultimately we've seen Muniz turn up, Faz, and ultimately now you think about how many opportunities Jay Stansfield is going to get in this team and how many minutes he's going to get, and the answer is probably limited.
Yeah, and I don't know whether it was almost an experiment for Marco Silva that he probably wanted to see what Muniz was like over a full 90 minutes and whether he would be able to last the distance and play at the quality expected. So we didn't need to change things too much just in case that, you know, Fulham 10 minutes ago need a goal and they were like, well, no, let's just stick with Muniz because we know that he can last the distance. But also because he also needs Muniz to get up to absolute full match practice in case Mitrovic is out for longer than the 2 weeks. But yeah, it must be a bit frustrating for someone like Jay Stansfield because we know he's got obvious quality. I mean, that goal he scored away at Birmingham in the cup was outstanding. But he's still so young. He's still absolutely young. You know, maybe we don't want to do what we have done with other players and similar, where we start playing them and their contract is up almost immediately and then they get snapped straight away, which we definitely don't want again.
No, absolutely not. We'll come on. There's a couple of academy prospects that we're going to talk about a little bit later. But two questions on Anthony Knockhart. One from Killian Murphy, who said, should we retain Knockhart this window as a squad player or even just for his newfound role of shithousing to wind down the clock in stoppage time? Or time to move him on assuming that we are getting promoted. Similar from Red at Red Red Not Good, who said thoughts on Knockhart looked good when he came on. I mean, he was due a decent game, Dom. He gets one a season.
If you're lucky, yeah. But I think with Knockhart, I said the only thing he's good at is time wasting. Like, he's exceptional at it, but I think it's the only thing he's good at. And if an offer was to come in, let's say, I don't think someone's going to come in for a permanent deal, but if someone wants to come in with a loan offer and they're willing to pay 100% of his wages, I would let him go. I think there was rumours of maybe teams in Saudi Arabia being interested in him as well this window. I mean, if Cavallero is going to be coming back fit soon in the next couple of weeks, I'd say that's an option I'd rather have on the bench as opposed to Knockhart. I understand he's probably used up his two good finishes of the season early on against Huddersfield in Ivan Cavallero, but if I say with Anthony Knockhart, I'm not against keeping him, but if an offer does come in which is 100% of his wages being paid, or someone comes in with a transfer offer, I would be happy for seeing him go. I said, I don't, when it comes to actual footballing ability, I don't really see it there, what he offers. But when it comes to a game like Saturday and it comes to time wasted, I'm more than happy for him to come on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, obviously we were stretched and he came on. And weirdly, he does feel like the most natural fit for that Harry Wilson role if Harry Wilson isn't there, because the whole thing is based on a player cutting in onto their left foot, they're being able to unleash from distance, being able to move in out. Harry Wilson is obviously streets ahead in terms of composure and what he's brought to this team this season. Knockhart does feel like the natural second choice in that position. And obviously, Bobby Reid did brilliantly at the weekend, and he did a lot of good work on that side, but it's a very different kind of role. Now, I'm not saying that we should necessarily keep Knockhart, but he got a good reception from the fans when he came on, I think, to begin with, ironically, and then he did some nice stuff, and everyone was like, oh, this is nice, this is fun, isn't it? But it does feel like he's a player that, as squad options go, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, he's not a bad player to have in and around the squad. Yeah, he's like you said, Dom, he's done what he needs to do. He's a bit of a passion merchant, just kind of runs round, time wastes a little bit. And yeah, he got in and had a shot and then went out for a corner and whatnot. But yeah, I wouldn't use him more regularly than what we did there at Stoke. Like I said, I'd rather have Cavallero on the bench than Knockhart. And I keep going back to in terms of this transfer window or the next one, we probably will go in for another winger just in terms of depth and whatnot, just a bit more quality. And when that happens, I think that then opens the door for Anthony Knockhart to go out to elsewhere.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair enough. Let's just talk a little bit about Kearney, about Seri, about the way that this has all happened. And George says, was Seri causing an imbalanced midfield? And has his temporary departure to AFCON been an accidental miracle? I think there's some similar questions sort of all over the place. Fulham transfer said to us, with the form Thomas Kearney is in and the clear balance that's brought to the side when him and Harrison Reed play together, does Seri get back in this side? Faz, it's an interesting one because obviously Seri's been so good this season, but it does feel like a really nice balance about this side at the moment.
Yeah, and the key thing is that balance term, because Seri has been quality. He did go off the ball a little bit. He wasn't as positive on the ball as we would expect of Jean-Michel Seri. I always feel like with Seri, his quality shows so easily in the fact that every one of his first touches is always a pass. He's always thinking about how to progress the ball and move it really quickly to start off Fulham attacks. And that's, you can't, at this level, is just so invaluable. But that does mean when Seri is playing in that position, Harrison Reed, as we've seen, has been playing a bit more further forward, Obviously, I love Harrison Reed, but we know that how good he is at playing in the Seri role. And then you're sort of thinking to yourself, well, then you're trying to make a choice for the other centre midfield, the more attacking player, between Tom Kearney and Fabio Carvalho, and that's probably a tough choice as well. And then you're trying to sort of like keep all of those three happy, and maybe it just shows that the quality in this team that someone like Seri can leave. Reed goes into his more natural position and has allowed Kearney now to play in his sort of favoured position that we've seen over the last few weeks, where he's absolutely flourished. But when Seri comes back, I don't know what the right answer is, because it's such a wonderful position to be in, that what we decide to do, but I think the choice would be, considering what we have seen, I think the choice is basically who you play in that defensive centre mid role between Seri and Harrison Reed, because given the form of Tom Kearney, it would be so difficult to drop him, and it'd be so difficult to drop Fabio Carvalho as well. So, and I think that also given our form, I'd probably stick with Harrison Reed when Seri gets back from AFCON as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously Seri's been so good, and there are obviously different strokes for different folks in terms of there are games, Dom, where you want that kind of unlocking ability that Seri has, that kind of metronomic thing that he can keep having, and it just keeps teams moving constantly. It keeps opposition running. But right now, I don't think it's at all an automatic drop back into this side. I think you keep it and then until something goes wrong. No,
yeah, but I think people sort of forget that Tom Kearney just can't. I don't think he'd start playing every single game for the rest of the season. I think rotation there is going to be key. Obviously, it depends obviously how Ivory Coast get on in the African Cup of Nations. But yeah, so I'm not saying he comes back and he's directly into the side, but it's not like I think just because we had a poor run of form in November when he was in the side, it means that's going to return if he comes back in. So I think for me, yes, he doesn't come straight back into the side, but I think he's definitely got a big part to play. And it was, you know, Tom Kearney, with the amount of midweek games we've got coming up, he can't be playing 2-3 games a week. So I think it's going to be sort of a rotational role as opposed to what it's been since the start of the season, where he's sort of been playing week in, week out.
Yeah, Jack, an interesting one. Was Harrison Reed potentially a little bit lucky yesterday to stay on the field? There was that tackle where he sort of launched himself and it looked a little bit naughty. At the time, I remember looking at it thinking, oh, he could be gone here. Obviously, he then went on and produced a masterclass, and obviously his driving from deep was such a crucial part of that first goal. And in general, I think, through the whole game, it was absolutely brilliant, but potentially a wee bit lucky.
Yeah, I agree. I was same as you when I saw that challenge. I thought, well, could this be one of those that goes against him? But then, yeah, it again didn't get sent off, and then he just kind of done what he usually does. I just think, hey, he's such a fantastic footballer, who is a Premier League player, 100%. And I think it kind of went under the radar, in my opinion, that we were quite lucky to keep hold of him in the summer. And I think the fact that he was playing for a relegated side last season maybe went under the radar of a few clubs, because I thought that for the vast majority of last season he held himself quite well, and he's doing it again in the Championship, and I'm sure next year he'll do the same again.
Yeah, absolutely. Last couple of questions were about Marek Rodak, and there's sort of two schools of thought here that we're seeing. Oscar Rowland says, is Rodak Premier League quality, or should we look to strengthen that position come the summer? Michael B says, time for a goalkeeper change? Rodak arguably accountable for 3 of the last 6 goals conceded, doesn't get as much stick because he's an academy product. But David Bray said, have we been unlucky to concede as many as we have in the recent run? The amount of long shots / worldies going in against us is ridiculous. The truth is probably, as usual, Farrell, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, there's nothing that I've personally seen from Rodak which makes me think his form has suffered. I think he's been playing fine. I think also it's kind of highlighted that he hasn't actually faced that many shots on target. So the goals that have gone in, none of them have been, I don't think they're that Rodak's fault, to be honest. So I don't think there's anything that I've seen where it goes, okay, let's put Rodak out and get Gazzaniga in again. I mean, Gazzaniga played in that cup game and was very, very good, I thought. But Rodak hasn't done anything for me that warrants questioning his position. You know, we've conceded more goals than we usually have done recently, but that's only in the last 2 games. And each one of those goals, I just can't see it's his fault at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one for me that I remember thinking, I think he should do better, where it was the one against Sheffield United. And obviously he's hit early and all of the above. But that was the goal I remember thinking, oh, I think Rodak should do better there. And if Gazzaniga had done that, there would have been people out for blood.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I'm with you. I think that there's not been too much that you can look at him and think, oh, it's all his fault. Last one, Dom. This is a slightly more fun one. I quite like it. Tor says, will we win the Championship in March or April?
March. No, I don't know. I haven't actually looked into, actually, mathematically, what's the most likely.
I think at the moment we could win it at Bournemouth, but that might have changed. That was maybe before yesterday. I think
that would be fantastic. The fun thing
that was. No, I want to win it at Middlesbrough midweek. That is the dream.
I'd quite like
one thing that could happen, which a mate pointed out to me,
it's
was
just
that
a dream because it's midweek. You know, it'd probably be about two fans there, known according to the QPR police, and then we'll win the league there. What I really want to happen is us to be already promoted by the time we play Bournemouth, and then we purposely lose to them. We obviously beat them and then lose to Blackburn in that sort of quick succession of period, just to make sure that Bournemouth don't get it. But at this rate, you know, as we looked at, it could be QPR who end up getting that top two, and I'm pretty sure we don't want to let them.
Be unbelievably fun to win it at Loftus Road, wouldn't it? Second of April, could we win the league at Loftus Road? That I would be well in front of.
Winning the Loftus Road would be great. I mean, it's probably the away ground. I've probably got the best record at being a Fulham fan. I think I've only seen us lose there once. So I said Middlesbrough away, QPR away. I said Bournemouth. Would be great. I mean, whenever we win the league, it'll be great. I would love it to be in something we've sort of got even more of a vested interest in apart from the game. So whether it is going getting one over QPR or if it is doing it against Scott Parker's Bournemouth, I think it would be sensational.
The fun thing that could happen that a mate pointed out to me is that we win it the week before we get to Bournemouth and they have to give us the guard of honour. That would be, and Scott Parker standing at the end of it, that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, in 2001 when we won the league, there was a parade. We got a bus out. Do you reckon we'll see similar scenes this time around if Fulham win the league?
That'd be quite good, to be fair. Because resident on a bus, Moon is on the old Orcs playing some round. Have you seen the video going around of him? Some TikTok of him dancing.
It's on TikTok, yeah,
absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You were probably at that parade, Farrell, were you?
I don't think I was actually. No, I wasn't at that one. So looking forward to a new one. Maybe that. What do you reckon the biggest shithousery would be? This bus that would be called Scott Parker or something like that. Like, yeah, they changed the number plate on it to like
P4K3R.
Yeah, exactly. That would be fun.
Absolutely.
And they call it HMS Piss the League as well. That would be good.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, to be fair. Right, all that's left to do, Faz, is for you to name this podcast. The honors are all yours.
Oh, thank you. Do you know what? It was such a, like, reading through them again, it's such a tough choice. There were some absolute bangers that were submitted this week. You know, like the Our Money's Worth from 30 Frames is a quality one. But, you know, it's been a long, long time coming for Richard Bamber to name this pod. And I'm going to go with his 1, 2, 3. I think it would look really, really good as the pod title as well.
Okay, it'll look good on the pictures. That's what you're working for, is it? You're a man for the gram. A man for the gram. Right, that is everything from today's Fulhamish podcast. And all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Dom Betts.
No worries, mate.
Thank you very much to Jack Stroudley. Congratulations on a wonderful debut.
Cheers, mate.
And thank you, of course, to Secretary Farrell Monk.
As Rodrigo Muniz would say, obrigado, Jack. Obrigado.
Absolutely correct. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Fulhamish Podcast as another win for the Whites. This time up at the Potteries sees us go 8 points clear at the top of the Championship table. And if that isn't a reason for celebration, then I don't know what is. Thanks for listening. We will see you later on in the week. Take it easy.
Harry Wilson, Mitrovic and Eskins.